Carrie Gracie worked for BBC News for 30 years before resigning this week. She was one of the most senior journalists there, but left her position in protest of what she called the network's, quote, secretive and illegal pay culture that paid women less than men.
And just a few weeks ago, longtime E! News host Kat Sadler left her job after finding out her co-host made double her salary. This shines a light on the pay gap between men and women that still persists. But in one country, it's now illegal for employers to pay men more than women in similar positions. And the show's Lauren Gilger is here with more on this. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning. So at the beginning of this year, a new law went into effect in Iceland that says companies and government agencies that have more than 25 employees must get government certification of their equal pay policies. And if they don't do it, they'll have to pay a fine. The idea is, of course, to make sure that men and women in the country are paid equally. And there's a long history that's led up to this there. So for more on that, I got a hold of Jen Hughes. She's a cultural anthropologist at the University of Minnesota who lived in Iceland and studied their social movements, language, and history. She says there are a lot of things about Iceland that make this kind of law pretty popular there, but that's not necessarily the story here in the United States.
I think this is a long time coming in Iceland. And in the short term, you know, we have the Me Too movement that's happening internationally. But that's really in the last few months that that's picked up steam. But this now law started in 2012 with a commission on gender equity, or in looking at gender equity in the Icelandic public sphere. And what the commission found was that despite legislation dating from the 1990s that sort of called for equal pay in Iceland, actually women in Iceland were still making much less than men.
So what do you think is different about the way that these movements have happened in Iceland than say, what's happened here? I mean, we also saw women's suffrage. We also saw a feminist movement in the 70s. But we do not have a law like this.
Right. I think, you know, Iceland is a small country, and it has a really particular history. Not only is it an island nation in the North Atlantic, but it also is a former colony of Denmark. So things like rights, independence are really valued in Iceland. They've become a cultural value. But also, you know, it's a small society. There are 343,000 people in all of Iceland.
Wow, yeah.
You also have a culture that really values difference in debate. So that's a really different history than what we have in the United States. And I think that as a result, you have a small society where political debate is really valued. Difference in opinion is really valued. And so people hash out ideas, and they do it very quickly. It's also so small. There's relatively little class hierarchy, so people encounter each other all over the place. You can be at the grocery store and see the prime minister. You can have a conversation with the president and your parliamentarians. So from this, these ideas spread, and people talk things out. They hash things out. They're not afraid to disagree. And at the end, you know, I think it kind of means that big ideas spread really fast.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk a little bit about this law then. So this means that companies and government agencies that employ at least 25 people will have to obtain government certification of their equal pay policies. Do you think this will really change things in Iceland?
You know, I do. I really do. And I was speaking to a journalist friend in Iceland earlier today, and he said, actually, there's very little opposition to this, and that it'll actually, I mean, it really will make a strong impact. It's a positive force in Iceland.
So then I wonder, do you think that this is realistic to happen in larger countries or in a really large country like here in America? Does this need to happen in a small society where people generally have higher education levels?
Sure. Well, I think that what Iceland has is, you know, higher literacy, not necessarily always higher education. Iceland has a 99% literacy rate. So people have access to information. Many people are online. I think that, you know, I'd really love to say this is something that we could implement here in the United States. It's really, and it's something that I, you know, fight for and work for in my own work. I don't know if it's something that could happen this quickly. And by this quickly, I mean like this took 30 years, really, to come to fruition. I don't know if that could happen, especially given the current climate in the United States and sort of the feminist backlash at the moment. I'm hopeful, but I think that it could start on the local level, and I think that's a good way to think about it, is to look at Iceland as both small society but also like a global hub, and to think about how we could implement the same kinds of open discourse and conversation, agreement that it's okay to disagree. That might be really useful. This is an economic measure. This is to encourage women to participate in the economic sphere. That is to discourage them from moving away from that and to increase the amount of workers you have working who feel validated, who aren't going to leave what should be higher paying positions because they know they won't get promotions or they won't get paid the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's really to just increase your economic participation in the world.
Jen Hughes is a cultural anthropologist and a filmmaker who has lived in Iceland. Jen, can you tell us how to say thank you in Icelandic?
Takk fyrir.
Thanks very much.
Thanks. Yeah.
All right. So, Lauren, if the U.S. isn't ready for a law like this, what can women do to fight on their own for equal pay?
Right. So there are laws and policies that can be changed, but women can also learn to advocate for themselves. And in fact, one group will be holding training workshops to help teach women how to negotiate salary in Tempe in the coming weeks. And I spoke with someone who manages those workshops. Abigail Lewis is with the American Association of University Women.
The AAW Work Smart program helps women negotiate for a new job, a raise, or promotion. In our workshops, women really learn how to articulate their value to a prospective or current employer. They also get an arsenal of skills that they can deploy in the negotiation process. But they also have a particular awareness that they can also bring to their friends, families, and communities about the pay gap.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about why this is necessary, about that pay gap. What does it look like here in Arizona, and how does that compare to the rest of the country?
The national pay gap right now is about 80 cents to the dollar. In Arizona, it's at 83 cents on the dollar, and where we have some fantastic AAW Work Smart workshops right now are in Tempe, where it's about 88 cents. To the dollar. And looking at the different congressional districts in Arizona, the 4th, 5th, and 6th districts seem to be below the 80 cent mark, with the other districts being above, with District 7 being at 96 cents on the dollar.
How does that level out over a career? Like if you're making 80% of what a man makes at the beginning of your career, does that sort of exponentially affect how much money you're going to make over a lifetime?
Of course it does. If women start off at 80 cents, you never can fully catch up, right? So as women go through their career, you're not just looking at what they're bringing home, but you're also talking about how are they funding their retirement? How are they funding future education for themselves or even paying back their student loans? How long does it take for them to buy a house? Do they have to put off having children? And when they have children, if they take any time off, how does that also affect? And so when they come back into the workforce, they're still already at a disadvantage. And we find that this gap starts within the first year getting out of college. So this isn't just like it happens much later. It's from the get-go. And what we find is that at the end of a woman's career, it's not just, you don't say she is 80% less than a man does. She probably has much less than that, given all the other things that life has to give you.
Yeah. And how much can these sorts of negotiating tactics really help reduce that inequality?
Well, it's one solution, right? There are many solutions in terms of how to close the pay gap, but the workshops are great because they give women tactical and practical skills they need at this very moment to go in. And we find that they're women who, you know, we hear anecdotally, they went in, you know, 2 weeks later and they were able to get a raise. So these are skills that you don't just use one time, you use them for the rest of your career. But once again, it's raising that awareness.
So I also wonder, how is it that women sort of can even find out what they need, how much they should be negotiating for, right? Like we're looking at stories recently like Kat Sadler at E! News and Carrie Gracie with the BBC, who both sort of found out that they had been making for quite a long time much less than their male counterparts, and then they left. How do you find out where you should be?
So I think, you know, this is where we can ask companies to give that information out. But what we do in our workshops is we work with places like Glassdoor or Payscale or Salary.com, definitely. But I think other companies, I know LinkedIn is working on a salary piece now too, where people can go and they can start researching what kind of salary they should be making. But I think, you know, we also encourage women to talk to family and friends who are in that area to do those kind of informational interviews. And, you know, we should be sharing that information. And, you know, we also hope that employers will start doing things like putting salary ranges on. The other important thing, I think women, and I'm sure not just women, but women go in and they say, I'm making X amount. And they think that's normal across industry or across position. And so what ends up happening is if employers can ask what their previous salary is, that's a real problem because there's no connection between their previous salary and the kind of salary they're trying to make. And so that's the other important part about learning the market rate is to be able to go in and say, well, this is how much I should be making. And it's also really helpful in cases of, let's say, the BBC, as you mentioned, is learning, wait, that's the market rate, you know, and I'm not making that much. And so what does that mean for my value and what I bring to this company? I would probably recommend talking to men because they are making the market rate at this moment. And so we need to find out from them how much they're making.
All right. Abigail Lewis is the Vice President of Leadership Programs and Campus Initiatives at the American Association of University Women. They're putting on some workshops teaching women how to negotiate their salaries in Tempe soon. Abigail, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us about this.
Thank you.
And those workshops are free, and they start next week in Tempe. And for more information on those, head to our website. That's theshow.kjzz.org.
And the show's Lauren Gilger. Thank you.
Thanks.